Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. We're broadcasting today live from the campus of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. I'm here for a major conference. The conference is entitled Southern Baptists, Evangelicals, and the Future of Denominationalism. It's a good conference. Lots of folks here. And we're dealing with some of the biggest questions about the future of the evangelical movement and being held here on an historic Southern Baptist campus. Also, how Southern Baptists engage with the larger evangelical movement and what the future is. The big focus here, though, really, is looking to the future generation. And there's no better place to do that than, of course, on a major college or university campus. And one of the big questions that has come up in the course of conversation today is one that has been a focal point of interest for several of my colleagues and I as we've been looking to the future. And that's the question, why are there so few young men in so many specific areas of calling? Let me give you just one imbalance. We know right now that in terms of those who are headed into missionary service, about 2 out of 3, and if that's off, it's going to be off in the wrong direction towards greater imbalance. About 2 out of 3 candidates right now for missionary service across the evangelical movement are young women rather than young men. And this is especially true with student volunteer missions, where there are far more women, young women involved, than young men. Now, that gets to the bigger question, why are so many men opting out, young men opting out, boys opting out of church? The feminization of the church and what this means, we're going to ask some big questions here. How does this happen? My dear friend, Dr. Danny Akin, president of Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary in Wake Forest, North Carolina, presented a paper this morning. And in his very passionate address, he raised this issue. He and I stayed up late at night talking about this issue. And we're very thankful that at least on our two campuses and on so many of the other campuses across the evangelical world, there is a reversal of this trend. There are a lot of young men. But that is just the tip of the iceberg. What's missing is in many ways more important than what's visible, what's present. And those who are missing from so many evangelical churches, evangelical mission agencies, where the Great Commission is meeting the future, there is an insufficient number of young men. I want to know why. I want to know what you're thinking. How do we get out of this? What do we need to do? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. And I'm glad to be talking about it again, as I said, from the campus here of Union University in Jackson, Tennessee. And it's always good to be here. And it's just good to be surrounded by so many just wonderful Christian scholars, Christian young people, and people concerned for the development of a Christian mind, a university that's not ashamed to be a university. And a Christian institution that's not ashamed to be a Christian institution. All right. At my website at albertmohler.com, just a bit ago, I posted an article, and folks, I think it's really important. I want to draw your attention to it. It is entitled Abortion and the American Conscience. You've probably read many articles on abortion. I don't think you've read one like this. Time and time again, I am frustrated by the fact that Americans seem unaware, even conservative pro-life Americans seem unaware of the origins of the big impetus for abortion in the 20th century. And specifically, what is lacking is the understanding of the racial element, of the eugenics element. For those of you who are unfamiliar with the word, eugenics means good birth or good breeding. And very early in the 20th century, there was a huge push in America to have more children from the fit, less from the unfit. If that sounds hauntingly familiar with what took shape in Nazi Germany and in the Third Reich, you're hearing right. Americans were very much into this. Americans and Germans and British intellectuals were very committed to this. Americans were looking at cities teeming with immigrants, and they said, we don't need more of those. And they're breeding. And they're breeding too fast. And then there were the issues of those that just by sheer racial and ethnic discrimination were considered, to be a threat as their numbers increased. And so you had figures in the early 20th century that were openly calling for not only persuasion, but even coercion to keep people from being able to have more children. You had an entire spate of forced sterilizations, especially when it came to persons who suffered from Down syndrome or some kind of mental impairment. Well, if you think that's gone, you're wrong. And by the way, Margaret Sanger, the founder of Planned Parenthood, kind of the poster woman for abortion on demand in America, she is the one who also was very much committed to this agenda. More children from the fit, less from the unfit. She spoke of morons, for instance. That was the word she used, saying we don't need more of those. We should not be having persons who reproduce and produce more. And if you think that's gone, it's not gone. Now, the reason I wrote my article is because tapes recently released by the Nixon Presidential Library include a conversation the day after Roe v. Wade was handed down. So the date of this conversation is January 23, 1973, and on that date, nearly four decades ago, President Richard M. Nixon suggested that the legalization of abortion on demand would lead to sexual permissiveness, and it would also, he said, perhaps lead to a further breakdown of the family. But he said, I know it's necessary. He said, and I quote from the tape, quote, there are times when abortion is necessary. I know that, said President Nixon, when you have a black and a white, end quote. So here's President Nixon saying where there's an interracial pregnancy, well, an abortion is necessary. That's his word, necessary. Shows you the racial discrimination at the very heart of the abortion logic. And it's not just that. Far more recently, as a matter of fact, just a few weeks ago, U.S. Supreme Court Associate Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, looking back to Roe v. Wade and to abortion in America, said, quote, and these are her words to the New York Times Magazine just days ago, just a couple weeks ago. She said, frankly, I had thought at the time Roe was decided there was concern about population growth and particularly growth in populations that we don't want to have too many of. So that Roe was going to be set up for Medicaid funding for abortion. So Justice Ginsburg is lamenting the fact that the Hyde Amendment passed and was held up by the U.S. Supreme Court that precludes the use of Medicaid money for abortions. And the reason she's doing this is because she said the logic, at least at the time. Now, to be fair, she's unclear in this comment whether this is her logic or she's simply citing the logic of the day. She says, nonetheless, that it meant that if there's no Medicaid funding, then there are too many children from people, quote, we don't want to have too many of, end quote. Now, I want to know who's asking Justice Ginsburg exactly what she's talking about there. And lest you have any doubt, what is clear from the context is her absolutely undiminished and unqualified support for abortion. She opposed even the partial birth abortion ban. And she, by the way, even opposes, and this is something that just, when you think you can't be shocked anymore, here's something that shocks me. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Associate Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, said that she laments that in Roe v. Wade, it says that the abortion decision should be between a woman and her physician. She said that acts like the woman's not capable of making the decision all by herself. She says this, and I quote, she said, the view you get is the tall doctor and the little woman who needs him. Now, folks, you're talking there about a notion of personal autonomy and a feminist agenda that is literally breathtaking. Now, she says, it's just too much even to say the doctor should be involved. Folks, take a good look at the comments made by the late president and the current justice and ask yourself why there is such a racial disparity in abortion. Who's most likely to be aborted? A white baby or an African-American baby? You know, that's why so many of the leaders of the civil rights movement early on saw abortion as one of the greatest threats. You even had someone like Jesse Jackson, who just a couple of decades ago was arguing that abortion on demand is a way of getting rid of black babies. It's a form of institutionalizing the reduction in black babies. But then when he ran for the Democratic presidential nomination, he changed his position on abortion because you can't hold to a pro-life position and hope for any kind of national leadership in the Democratic Party, certainly to run as a national candidate. There are other things in the news we need to be talking about. Speaking of abortion, by the way, the Pew Charitable Trust funds a group that is known as the Pew Research Center, and they've come out with a very interesting poll indicating that support for abortion is slipping in America. This is good news. And by the way, this is one of the most hopeful things out there. The trend on abortion is that fewer persons are ardent defenders of abortion. And just in case you're wondering where this is going, about 47% of Americans, according to this latest poll, said abortion should be legal in all or most cases. 45% said it should be illegal in all or most cases. The shift here is that it's moving in more of a pro-life direction. Big news back earlier in the spring about an even larger study that indicated the same thing. But I'll tell you, what's newsworthy about this, what really catches my attention, is not the first-level question, do you think abortion should be legal or illegal, but it's the second-level question, how important is this issue to you? Now, here's what's different. Only 8% of those who identified themselves as liberal Democrats said abortion was a critical issue facing the country. Only 8% of liberal Democrats. Meanwhile, among conservative Republicans, 26% said abortion is a major issue facing the nation. Now, here's why that ought to give you some hope. If on the pro-life side there's a sense that the issue really is important, and if there's a sense on the other side that it's really now not so important, well, just remember, one of the ways an argument gains traction in the culture is because there are passionate people making passionate arguments, drawing the conscience of the nation to a truth the nation otherwise would not see and would not face. And that's why we need to be talking about this issue as witnesses to life, not just because we think it's an important issue, and certainly not just because it's a political issue, but because every single human being is made in the image of God. It's a Christian, biblical, gospel issue. We'll be back to ask, why are there so few men going into missions? Larger questions about males and females in the church today on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Moeller Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. The disparity has been present for some time. As a matter of fact, it's very interesting just to look at, for instance, some of the great missionary heroes and heroines. As you go back to the original birth of the modern missions movement, you had the Adoniram Judsons and the Luther Rices and, of course, the William Careys. And then in the second great wave of missions, you had, you know, the John Pattons and the Hudson Taylors and people like that, where you realize, you know, there's some great men and married men and couples who are going. But in this third wave, certainly at about the time of the turn of the century to the 20th century, you had all of a sudden a disparity that begins to show up with women who seem to be responding to the call to missions and the Great Commission in greater numbers than men. And then by the time you get to the 1970s, 80s, and 90s, the trend gets even more and more exaggerated. Right now, the trend is about two out of three missionaries right now being commissioned are women. And, of course, there's some mission agencies where that may be different. There's some mission agencies may only send men. That's not the big concern here. The big concern is, as you look across the evangelical world, there is a tremendous disparity. And by the way, that mirrors a disparity in the local church, where the attendance in the local church is also about two-thirds female, one-third male, across American Protestant and evangelical churches. Now, the question is why, and what do we do about it? The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We have some great callers on the line. Let's go first to Pelham, Alabama. Bob, what are you thinking?
Hello, Dr. Moeller. I think one reason is we have too many presentations from missionaries and not enough conversations with them so we can get to know what it is they really do and what a fulfillment it is for them to do it. Since women's hearts are more easily touched, they'll respond without that, but men won't.
You know, that's a fascinating discussion point, Bob. What you're saying there is that that a lot of people think of missions and their first response to it is more of an emotional response, but if you want men, you're going to have to really get into a nuts and bolts, so to say, conversation about mission. I think there's great wisdom in that. I think that's a tremendous point. And I think it also has to come with the fact that if indeed the people who are making these presentations are women, now don't get me wrong, there are women who are serving in such a valorous way, in such a wonderful and dedicated and committed way. This is not a conversation in which we're suggesting we want fewer women to go. As a matter of fact, let's be thankful they are there. And as a matter of fact, just in the last few weeks, I was told of a specific context in which a ministry in a North African nation is being undertaken by a woman who is there ministering to other women, and there is simply no man there, no man who is yet willing to go to minister there to the men. And by the way, in the Muslim world, the only way you're going to reach men is with other men, period. I think that principle generally applies just about everywhere, but in the Muslim world in a way that is far more structured than perhaps elsewhere. I think Bob's right. I think that's an excellent way to begin the conversation. There's going to have to be far more than an emotional tug. And, you know, I can't even hear Bob make that suggestion without thinking back to my own experience as a Southern Baptist growing up. Most of the missions presentations that I observed, the more I think about it, were really about an emotional tug and rather than a real clear presentation of the Great Commission call the call of Christ to the nations and what it's going to take to get from here to there. Great point. Let's go to Annapolis, Maryland. Chris is on the line. Go ahead, Chris.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I agree with Bob thoroughly. My point is that fathers and uncles and brothers and the male roles of Christians and the church do not nurture a love for Christ. They're more into the world and let's be good doing good works and let's and the world's agenda and earning good money and supporting our families and all these things. But if we put our righteousness for Christ first, or his righteousness, and a dedication for who he is and what his word says, the word's agenda versus the world's agenda, and a heart soft for the love of God, that would change everything, because then men would actually love each other as they need to love each other and support each other as they need to be supported to live, have Christ live through them to change the whole culture.
You know, one of the most interesting questions, Chris, and you raised this, if I could kind of get to what I think is at least the heart of your very interesting comment there, it has to do with the fact that for some reason men seem to have a far more difficult time focusing on spiritual priorities. And as a man, and as a teacher of men, and as a leader of men, I got to tell you, that's something that I face all the time. Now, I'm thankful to be surrounded by so many absolutely outstanding, called, bright, intelligent, convictional young men. But the ones we're worried about are not the ones we get to see right now. They're the ones who aren't here. They're the ones who are absent that is our concern. And I'll tell you, I think you're onto something there. And I think it has to do with Christian parents. And you started out, Chris, making that point. And that comes again. You know, how many Christian dads are going to be absolutely thrilled and excited to have their son become a missionary, to go plant a church somewhere around the world, to give up career, to give up advancement, to give up so many things, and to go out? And I don't want to just pick on sports, but I'll tell you, there are an awful lot of dads who do not, during the middle school, high school, and college years, encourage their sons to give themselves to spiritual things, but rather only to things that that are more fun, avocational. And then just to use a word that could be overused here because it's hard to define sometimes, worldly, including money and success. And an awful lot of parents, they want their children, but especially their sons, to do well financially. And there's almost an embarrassment factor on the part of some Christian parents if indeed, you know, their children seem to be following spiritual priorities that honor Christ. There are too many parents that are disappointed in that. And I cannot think of a greater indictment of an improper parental love than a parental love that says, I've got to keep you. You can't go. This is what you have to do. Don't follow the call of the gospel. You know, better than a millstone is tied around the neck than that one misleads one of these little ones. Thanks for the call, Chris. Let's go to Scott calling from Dallas, Texas. What are you thinking, Scott?
Hey, Dr. Mueller, I just wanted to say we need to get you on the radio down here. I saw your Twitter is why I called in.
Well, I appreciate you calling in. Glad to hear from you, Scott. What are you thinking?
Well, I was wondering if you could comment on, seems like the current trend right now, the emphasis that's being pushed in conferences and books is domestic church planting. And that's obviously a great thing that we can rejoice in. But I wonder if you think that that's taken the focus away for some of the young seminarians from the mission field.
Yes, Scott, I think that's another very important insight, and it gets back to kind of generational cool. I was reading a book on marketing the other day just because I'm fascinated with how marketers are always trying to figure out how to sell stuff, how to push an agenda, how to get people interested in their product. And one of the points this author was making is that in every generation, certain things just are cool. And if you achieve that cool, you got the inside slot. And I think church planting right now is generation cool. With the younger generation, especially young men right now. And there's a lot to celebrate in that. As a seminary president, as a pastor, and as a Christian leader, I'm going to go back and say, I think that is absolutely phenomenal, because the greatest way to reach people in the United States is to plant a church. The problem with that, and Scott, I appreciate the passion behind your call, the problem with that is we shouldn't have geographical limitations on that church planting vision. It should be an international vision of church planting. And I think that's the future, both for getting young men involved, but also for actually planting gospel churches that will then replicate themselves everywhere around the world. Appreciate your call, Scott. What are you thinking? Give me a call at 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Coast to coast and with listeners around the world, you're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmueller.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mueller.
Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. The question is this: why so few men going into missions, in particular into overseas service to the Great Commission of Jesus Christ? That's the big question. And the question is pressed upon us by some recent statistics and also by observation and by the cry from so many mission fields saying we need men. And the question is why so many young women responding and far fewer young men. The ratio, we are told, across the evangelical world is about 2 to 3. And that ought to tell us something. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about the how, why, and then the what. What do we do about this? Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Bill's listening on WHIM. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, I just want to make a statement. Thanks, Dr. Mueller. It seems to be that those who would be missionaries are now being pushed to be pastors. I don't know if it's for the reason that they feel pastor seems to be a more glorious job or whatever, but I'm just seeing that as a trend, and I just wanted to make that comment.
Yeah, no, I think that's a trend that is discernible and understandable, and I'll tell you, there are some good reasons for that trend, Bill, and I'm sure you recognize this as well. Number one, the scripture clearly points to men serving as pastors. The Bible clearly holds up the pastorate. The teaching elder role is one of great respect and centrality to the purposes of God in the church, the reign of Christ in the church, how Christ feeds his people by his word in the church. The problem, as I see it, is Bill, that we've got geographical blinders on that really should be absent. The call of the Great Commission, the call of the nations to exalt in Christ should be calling us out, both in going out and in sending out. And for that reason, I want to see pastors. I want to see churches that pastors can lead. And the issue is, how do we make sure those churches are going to be there where the churches are not now, especially to the billions of people around the world who've never heard the gospel, and people groups by the thousands that do not even have a shred of the scripture, nor any dimension of Christian witness. That's the big question, and I agree with you. I would just say this. The call of the pastor, so many men going into the pastor, that's not the problem. The problem is, where are they going to pastor? Where are the churches desperately needing pastors? We've got to expand the geography there. Let's go to Fairmont, Nebraska. Joanne, what's on your mind?
My concern is with government or public schools, children are having to decide at an early age what career they're going into, and so the opportunity to go into a mission field or into becoming a pastor might not even be open to them because they have to fill these job slots that the government wants them to fill.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting, Joanne. We're not yet where Europe is, but in a lot of the continental European countries, by the time a child is, say, 12 or 13, his or her future is pretty much cast out because that is written out for them, because they're either going to go to a gymnasium, for instance, in Germany that leads to a college experience, or they're going to go to some kind of technical school. And so there's a lot to what you're saying there, especially in the larger context of career focus. We are so focused on career and profession and job and income and status that from very early ages, when our children tell us what they want to be when they grow up, you know, parents are thinking, I wonder if that's really going to work. You know, I remember one time when our daughter Katie said that what she wanted to be was a Christian gas station worker. And I don't know, she's like 4 or 5 years old, and she thought it was cool seeing the people that worked in a gas station. And so she said, I'll just be a Christian gas station worker. And, you know, that's really cute when you're 4 or 5. And parents generally at 4 or 5 don't have to say, no, think stockbroker. You know, that's not what you have to do. But when the kids say 13 or 14 years old and says, I think I want to be an astronaut, they'll, you know, dad says, that's cool. You know, I don't think it's going to happen, but it's cool. And yet, you know, if he said I want to be a missionary, I wonder how many dads would say, hey, that's cool. Which leads me to say, you know, we really need to have people who are on the front lines of the Christ call to the nations before our children and young people regularly. We need to make sure they are surrounded by contact with these folks. One of the things you can do with your children is get them very closely linked with a missionary family to where they can really understand what's going on. Pen pals, email, all kinds of things that can go back and forth. You got to put it on their screen because, guys, it's not on their screen. It's not on their screen at all. They're not going to find it in their screen at school. They're not going to find it on their screen with their peers. They're not going to find it on the screen anywhere. But among Christians who believe that the call of the nations and the Great Commission is the great imperative that Christ has given his church, go and make disciples. If we don't see the glory of God as the nations exalting Christ, and we don't see what it's going to take in order to get from here to there, if we don't see that as a glorious calling, a calling to be esteemed above just about anything else you can think of, then our children are going to get the point. And that is that, well, I'll tell you, one of the original problems with the call to missions is that for many people, young and old, it just seems so exotic. We got to make it less exotic, more normal for a Great Commission church. This is what normal ought to look like. The phone number is 877-893-8255. We'll be right back with your calls.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back. Always glad to hear from folks on Twitter and Facebook. John wrote in to say the same problem seen on the mission field is seen in local churches. We need to inspire men to man up into the image of Christ and serve by leading. Well, check mark beside that one. Patrick wrote in to say most church leaders promote a consumer mentality of Christianity. There's more to church and Christianity than promotions, activities, programs, and passively listen to sermons. Men need to be discipled by the spiritual leaders of their homes and lead boldly. That is, to be the spiritual leaders of their homes and lead boldly. Check on that one. Jacob wrote, we have a lack of men teaching their boys to be men for Jesus. It just keeps snowballing. Very right, Jacob. Dwayne wrote in to say the gospel's been feminized, and in too many cases, Dwayne, it certainly has been. Brian wrote in to say the same was true during William Carey's time throughout the history of the church. We have overlooked the role of women in missions rather than complain that women are more active in missions. We should applaud them and join them in God's cause for the nation. Well, that's fine, but no one is complaining that women are more active. We've made that point. We're valorizing the women who are responding to the call. The question is, why not the men? Patrick wrote in to say, it's a problem in many facets. The feminization of boys and men in our culture is an issue that continues to plague the American church on all fronts. But I don't think that's the only factor. By and large, men in our culture and the American church find contentment in temporary pleasures rather than in being captivated by eternal realities. I think that's true. Absolutely true. What do you think? Give me a call, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. So go to Orlando, Florida. Jim's listening on WHIM. Go ahead, Jim.
Yes, hello, doctor. I'll try to do this real quick. Jesus was and is relationship orientated, and I think especially in the 20th century, us men have really gotten away from that, and the women have always been relation orientated. And it goes along with some facts that you brought up against it or with it, and also the breakdown of the family relationship and the communication, like different sides of the same coin. I could go on, but I want your feedback on that.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you the feedback. It's going to be pretty direct here, Jim. You're exactly right. You want to know one of the reasons why we are told men often don't do so well in the mission field? It's because we are told they are not team-oriented in this kind of work, but are often loners. It gets right to the relational absence you're talking about. And, usually on the mission field, it's pretty close proximity. And, I've literally been in places of the world where the missionaries are just clumped together, just in one place, living almost communally. I've been in other places where they are distributed all throughout the society, geographically and culturally, but they really draw their community together as the church gathers together. There has to be a very strong relational aspect to this, or it's not going to work. You look at the history of Christian missions, and you look at the partnerships, like I mentioned, Adoniram Judson and Luther Rice. Those partnerships are very, very important, and the whole relational issue with men can become a great challenge, not only to missions, but to ministry. And that works both ways, because one of the ways it works is that we have feminized some of these expectations. Many pastors think their role is basically to be a handholder. Their role is basically to be the emoter-in-chief of the church, and that is not the case. That is profoundly not the case. And there are a lot of men who find themselves seduced into a continuing counseling ministry rather than giving themselves to the preaching of the word. So that's one aspect of it. But the other aspect of it is that that we have men who simply say, you know, I'd rather do it on my own. And even as we've just been talking about church planting, and I have mentioned how great it I think it is that so many of these young guys are going into church planting, you know, it's almost impossible to do that singularly. And you'll notice that in the New Testament, there's a model of these guys being sent out often two by two. They're sent out more often as teams than as individuals. It's not impossible to go and individually, by yourself, all alone, start a church. But it turns out that it's far more effective in most situations to go as a team. And I think for good reason. And if you're a team, that's going to take some relational skills. It's going to take relational commitment. And it's going to take the ability to, just like your mom used to say, play nice in the sandbox. It's sandbox rules here, guys. And, just the ability to work together, that's a very important part of ministry in the local church. Absolutely. Let's go to Orlando, Florida. Debbie's listening on WTLN. Go ahead, Debbie.
Yes, I just wanted to talk about Tim Tebow that plays for the Florida Gators. What a great influence he's had on young children as far as being a missionary. His parents were missionaries, and he was brought up over in the Philippines.
Yeah, that's a very good point, Debbie. And, Tim's family has been so deeply involved in this. His dad has led so many mission tours and also has really helped so many people to perceive the call into missions and ministry. And there's a great masculine angle to that. I've known of that for many years and have many connections there. And we've had on our campus many of the young men who have been highly touched by that family and that ministry. And it's just a reminder that often one man can be a catalyst to lead many other younger men, especially, into the call to missions. And I appreciate the fact that there's a family that publicly, with all of the celebrity and everything that comes in terms of that athletic ability, keeps the issue on the gospel and not just as a covert agenda, not just as something that the family knows, but as something that that the world knows as well. Thank you so much for that call. By the way, that whole issue also reminds us that short-term missions is often the way to get people involved in career missions. You sometimes flinch at just the word career missions. It's not just a career, but what's meant by that is long-term. And the reality is that there are a lot of people who go on one of these mission experiences and their lives are touched. They see the call of God to the nations. They see what it is to minister to an unreached people group. They see what it's like to observe the gospel being heard for the very first time. And the infectious excitement about that leads to a long-term commitment, a reordering of priorities, a very clear sense of calling that would never have been perceived if that person were not there on the mission field. So, you know, this whole issue of short-term volunteer missions and especially mission trips, it's a two-edged sword. I mean, the downside is it takes an awful lot of money to get people halfway around the world. And if you're just doing it for a couple of weeks, sometimes you look at that and say, you know, how does that add up for the kingdom? Well, it often adds up for the kingdom. Here's the other side of that equation. By leading to people who are fanatically committed to missions who never would have been otherwise, either in terms of sending or in terms of going, in terms of supporting or in terms of just selling out and following the call of God to the uttermost parts of the world. Folks, what we're talking about here is the need to see more men involved. Again, we don't need any fewer women. We need more women, too. But it's the imbalance that comes to our attention. And, this is just another opportunity in which we need to say, in the local church and on the mission field, often it's faithful women who keep it going when no one else will. Well, God bless them. But where are the men? And by the way, the absence of men is an indictment of the church, often because we get the whole role situation and the responsibilities of men and women confused, and the men just are absent. This is a situation we've got to turn around and turn around fast. Back with final thoughts on the Albert Mueller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. Good conversation about men in missions. That's a conversation we need to track and continue. Several people have sent me an article. They've sent me the link and said, what do you think about this? Here's the headline. Spanking may lower kids' IQs. Health Day News, Associated Press, and others have come out with this. This is picked up by Yahoo News and several news sources. Time Magazine picked it up. John Cloud wrote an article. And so folks are asking, is there anything to this? Well, number one, the guy who's behind this is Murray Strauss. He is professor of sociology and co-director of the Family Research Laboratory at the University of New Hampshire. He's like number one anti-spanking guy in America. He's the guy that comes up with all these studies. He's written several books. And if you're going to buy into his logic, you're going to buy into his logic. But this one, I have to say, is one that I just have to smile when I look at it, because you talk about overreaching in research. What he did was look at a correlation, not causation, not saying that spanking causes this, just a correlation of people where there's more spanking and where there's lower IQs. Well, you know, guys, you can do with this whatever you want, but I'll tell you, here's what I think some parents are going to look at. Spanking may lower kids' IQs. Something tells me there's some parents are going to say, look, I'd rather have him behave, even if it costs a couple of IQ points. And I think when it comes down to it, you need to realize that you're either going to follow the logic of the scripture or not. Now, clearly, there's not talking about abusive behavior. It's not talking about bad parenting. It's not talking about single tool in the toolbox parenting. It is talking about the fact, as Christians think about this, that there's a biblical model of parenting that comes down to discipline. And the people who are against spanking are generally against any kind of punitive discipline. It's not just a physical issue. It's a moral issue. And for that reason, my guess is most parents are going to give this about as much time as it's worth. By the way, the man who's behind this, Murray Strauss, it turns out that he spanked his own children. And that evidently had something to do with it as well. He says he feels badly about it now. But nonetheless, that's an issue that is out there. Speaking of out there, way out there on the moon, there's going to be supposedly a big boom tomorrow. NASA is bombing the moon, sending a very large missile traveling twice the speed of a bullet in order to create an explosion barely on the surface of the moon that will create a plume of moon dust. A satellite will then test to find out if there is water on the moon. Now, guys, I got to tell you, this is just, we're talking about men and missions. Let me just give you a little male angle on this. There is not a man or a boy on this planet. There is no one with an XY chromosome who wouldn't love to have a hand in bombing the moon. I'd like to push that button, see that explosion. And by the way, you're going to get to see it, because NASA is going to be live streaming it on its website. By the way, this explosion is expected to be so big that it produces a plume that can be visible from some earthly telescopes. My guess is that just may get some people out early in the morning, 7:15, I'm told, Eastern time, to see the big boom. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about issues of importance that Christians should be thinking about and talking about on the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.